Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to our March Bible study. It's Pastor David here, and we've reached chapter 20 in the book of Genesis. As we work our way through these vital and important chapters in the first book of the Bible. Just a reminder, I suppose, I should have said this before, that these Bible studies would usually take place in church on a Wednesday evening, where I would give these studies lasting 20-25 minutes or so, and after which the whole rest of the meeting would be opened up for discussion and questions and prayer about what God has spoken to us from his word. And what we do in this audio format is simply the study bit of that. And so I trust that you can explore and meditate upon it in your own way yourself. So chapter 20, verse 1. Now Abraham moved on from there into the region of the Negev, and lived between Kadesh and Shur, and for a while he stayed in Gerar. And so this opening verse tells us that after many years of living in Mamre, and after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, we now find that Abraham ups with all his family and possessions and leaves Mamre and begins to journey south. Of course, it was years ago that God had told him to walk the land, to travel the whole promised land. And so after many years of being quite settled there in Mamre, and some of the scholars have calculated 20 or more years, Abraham now sets off once more for unknown territory. And I suppose we have to draw from that opening verse that we as Christians must never form the mindset that it's finished, that our journey of following the Lord and our work and service for him is done now. Perhaps we're older and we think that all the exploring and all the new work, well, we can leave for the younger ones. And that's so wrong, because God always has something new for each one of us. Now, I say that Abraham was travelling to unknown territory, but he would have known, as everyone did at that time, that the south was Philistine country. It was named Philistia. And these people were a warring, violent bunch. And so I'm sure that he would have been quite concerned and quite anxious about what might happen to him. Verse 2. In Gerar, Abraham said of his wife Sarah, "She is my sister." And then Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent for Sarah and took her. And in his concern and worry and fear, Abraham wrongly uses the deception he'd used before, pretending that Sarah is not his wife, but that she's his sister. And in later verses in this chapter, we'll come to them, we read that Abram had made Sarah promise that if ever they got into difficulties regarding others desiring her, because we are told a number of times that she was a very beautiful woman, that if they ever got in difficulty, then she would say that Abram was her brother. And as I say, we'll come to verse 13 shortly. This is the same deceitful sin that had happened there a number of years ago in Egypt. And so, if the commentators are right, 20 plus years after committing this sin there in Egypt, 20 long years without it ever happening again, up it comes. And Abraham falls for it and does it again. And surely this is a warning to us, even a great man of faith like Abraham, who had done such great things for God by faith. Abraham, who God holds up as an example of faith, even a man like that can fall for an old sin. He probably thought that he'd defeated and overcome years ago. So the Christian can never relax over our sin bias. The old nature is alive and kicking within us, looking for any chance at all to bring us down. So we need to live each day as watchful, prayerful people in total dependence on God. Our old habitual sins can overcome us at any time. Verse 3. But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman." And although Abraham was now designing his own method of keeping safe with this deceit, and in his thinking, probably thinking that this action would keep God's promise of an heir alive, well, he needn't have worried, for God was already at work preparing the heart of Abimelech. Verse 4. Now Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, "Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation?" God had visited this man Abimelech, and as we will read later, made him and all his household ill, so that Sarah would not be defiled, would not be touched, and would be kept safe. Incidentally, here's another example in the Bible of God being the one who causes illness. So many of these, and yet prevalent today, those who believe that God doesn't do that. But here it is again. This pagan king seems to have some moral understanding of God and God's moral ways in how he responds to God in the dream. We notice him replying to God saying, "Lord, Lord, will you slay innocent people?" I do hope, brothers and sisters, that you rejoice in hearing this, reading these words, seeing God at work, completely unseen by Abraham and Sarah. God at work protecting the promised royal seed through which the Messiah, the Christ, would come. God at work, despite their fallenness, protecting God's plan here in the Philistine enemy area, which is ruled by what has become a now very sympathetic king. Verse 5. "Did he not say to me, 'She is my sister'? Didn't she also say, 'He is my brother'? I've done this with a clear conscience and clean hands." And then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know you did this with a clear conscience, so I have kept you from sinning against me. That is why I did not let you touch her." And later on we'll read how, by bringing illness to the household, God kept Abimelech from this sin. So God does acknowledge that Abimelech has integrity of heart and wants to act in a right way, in a way that's pleasing to God. Verse 7. "Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you and you will live. But if you don't return her, you may be sure that you and all yours will die. Here's a terrible thing when we think about it, that Abraham, the man of God, a prophet sent by God to this pagan king, is the one who's deep in sin. And the pagan king is the one who's open to seeking not to displease God. How very careful we must be not to tarnish our own witness, to be constantly asking the Lord, lead me not into temptation, but deliver me from the evil one. And we see just how eager Abimelech is to be true to God. Verse 8. Then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know you did this with a clear conscience, so I've kept you from sinning against me. So, in verse 8, early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials, and when he had told them all that had happened, they were very much afraid. After hearing from God, he's up at first light. And he also tells all of those around him how God has dealt with him. And they all believe what Abimelech's witness, and they become afraid that now God will punish them for the king taking Sarah. Verse 9. Then Abimelech called Abraham in and said, what have you done to us? How have I wronged you that you have brought such great guilt upon me and upon my kingdom? You have done things to me that should not be done. And Abimelech asked Abraham, what was your reason for doing this? What a contrast we see here. Abimelech distraught over his sin, even though done in complete innocence. And Abraham, God's man, deliberately choosing to sin. Verse 11. Abraham replied, I said to myself, there's surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. And so Abraham owns up and says he did it because he thought the pagans would kill him to get his wife. Now, I don't think we must be hard on him. We mustn't really be too hard on Abraham, because I believe he had a rock-solid faith in God's promise of an heir through which God would bless the nations. And although fallible, Abraham is a man of great faith. And so, although afraid for himself, without a doubt, he was looking after his own safety, without a doubt at all, I believe he would also be afraid that coming to Philistia would put the promise of an heir in jeopardy, God's promise of a future one in jeopardy if he was killed. Verse 12. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife. Although there's an element of truth in saying Sarah is my sister, you know, easily you can rationalise, it's only a little white lie, it's only half a lie. Abraham knows that it's a lie, and it's wrong, and it's sin. Verse 13. And when God had me wander from my father's household, I said to her, this is how you can show your love to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother. So here we have what I mentioned earlier, that Abram had concocted this lie with Sarah all those years ago before they left Ur. Verse 14, then Abimelech brought sheep and cattle and male and female slaves and gave them to Abraham, and he returned Sarah, his wife, to him, and Abimelech said, my land is before you, live wherever you like. So Abimelech's a very different ruler than the Pharaoh of Egypt, who on discovering Abram's deceit in Egypt, runs him out of the land But here Abimelech freely gives Abraham his choice of the land. And I suppose the question comes to us, doesn't it? How can sinful Abraham have fallen on his feet like this? Seems to have benefited from the sin. And the answer is that despite his failure, that God had prepared the way. God had worked in the heart of a pagan king. It wasn't that Abraham fell on his feet. This was a part of God's plan. And that's what Jesus has done for us. As Christians belonging to him, we will go through many trials. We'll have many failures as we journey. But if we're journeying with him in repentance and faith, then his promise is that he will go before us to prepare the way for us to continue to serve him. Not just for our own benefit, not just smoothing the way so that we can have a nicer, easier life, but spiritually that our lives may glorify him. And God often uses our falls and our failures, as here with Abraham, to purify us so that he can use us even more for even greater things. So verse 16, to Sarah he said, I am giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. This is to cover the offence against you before all who are with you. You are completely vindicated. A wonderful thing that Abimelech does here with Sarah. She's obviously reproved for going along with Abraham's deceit. And we find Abimelech saying, I'm doing this. I'm giving this valuable gift of the land and flocks and money and people. And I'm doing it so that no one will ever think that you've abused my kindness, that I am set against you. So Abimelech is just making sure that there is no shame at all put on Abraham and Sarah for this. And again, this is all purposed by God in bringing them to this place. Who could have thought in a pagan land that God has moved Abraham into a pagan place and that there would be such a reception, such a change in the heart of the ruler. So verse 17. Then Abraham prayed to God and God healed Abimelech, his wife, his slave girls, so they could have children again. For the Lord had closed up every womb in Abimelech's household because of Abraham, Sarah's wife. I suppose these words show us that all this didn't happen over a weekend, that it was over a number of months, with the matter of closing up and opening up the wombs of the ladies in the household. And so, as we close, what is all of this saying to us today? It's an interesting story, but is it anything to say to us? Is it just Old Testament stuff, you know, that you read about, but it's all very different now? Is God still working in this way? Does he still be the God of miracles? Well, of course, the greatest miracle of all is the saving of a lost sinner, the lifting up of fallen sinners, fallen people, Christians, lifting them up when they've gone and fallen into sin and continuing to use them for his glory. There's no greater miracle than those two. And the great point of these closing verses is to see that Abraham and Sarah, despite their fall, will still be used by God, so that the miracle of healing takes place now through the intercession of Abraham. And great things still happen today through the intercession, not of saints, you know what I mean by that, I'm not praying to say it, but through the intercession of saved sinners, God's people, you and I. And so we've seen in this chapter that a person can believe the truth of God with all their heart, but still find those doubts and fears regarding God's call to move on, regarding God's direction. We've seen that habitual sin, or sins that, well, we think we've defeated years ago, can suddenly come back and bite us. And so we need that daily walk of watchfulness. And we've seen how God shows us our sin so that he can purify us before that he can use us. And we've seen the power of intercession, and to expect to see God do great things through our intercessions on behalf of others. Well, we'll leave it there until next time, where we'll move into chapter 21. And at last, in chapter 21, the promised heir, God's promised seed line, is born.